You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Well, you know, I have to admit that I appreciate your directness, Daryl, and I will try and be as direct and honest with you as I possibly can be. I am positive that you are the most unattractive man I have ever met in my entire life. You know, in the short time we've been together, you have demonstrated every loathsome characteristic of the male personality and even discovered a few new ones. You are physically repulsive, intellectually retarded, you're morally reprehensible, vulgar, insensitive, selfish, stupid. You have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell. You know, you're not even interesting enough to make me sick.
Do you like to be on the top or the bottom?
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got nards!
Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 61 for the 22nd of October, 2011. I am Dave McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
Yeah, I'm good, man. How you doing?
Not too bad. We've been plagued by problems. Anyway, we'll keep moving on.
It's been an interesting day.
It's been an interesting little break in between the two shows. The first show went so perfectly, and this show has been so troublesome. We're also joined by Richard Gray. How are you, Richard?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
For those who only listen to the audio show, you won't know because you weren't here in the live show, but we started with the wrong credit music, then the credits started to roll, then it was the camera.
Yeah, no, none of this wee shit, man. That's all you.
The cameras won't switch. I couldn't go to a black screen. I have no idea what is going on.
There were plagues, locusts. My fault, I swear to God.
I had to open the show with that clip, though, because I recently rewatched Witches of Eastwick, and I got to say, that clip just made me laugh out loud. How many times could you insult one person?
Well, as Josh said, you know, only Jack Nicholson could get away with that stuff.
Oh,
you know,
dude. Like, he's just so disgusting in that film. It's great.
It's fantastic. It actually bears no relevance to the episode at all. I just needed to play it. All right. This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of geekactually.com. And this week, we are going to review Steven Soderbergh's new film, Contagion. We're also going to explore a little bit of entertainment news. Yes, news is back, people. This week, we've got some new trailers. We've got a very Harold and Kumar Christmas The Red Band trailer, and we also have the new Muppets trailer. Now, this is actually last week's trailer, but we didn't do news last week, so we didn't play it, so I thought we'd play it this week because it's a really, really fun trailer.
There is a trailer, we're probably not going to show it, but there is, it was about 30 seconds of Piranha 3DD played on the Scream Awards.
I tried to capture it, but I had problems with the capture.
No, it was really low res, all the stuff that was floating around online. I knew it wouldn't be on the show, but it's worth mentioning. If you can hunt it down, it's awesome.
Although I got to say, wow. I'm a little disappointed that they're so unoriginal that they've given him legs like in Planet Terror.
Planet Terror. I was going to say, like, I wasn't going to spoil it for people who haven't seen it yet, but it's, yeah, there's definitely a Rodriguez influence to the way they brought back Bing Rhames' character.
Absolutely. You guys need to get a little bit closer into your mic. We're getting a little bit of echo and hollowness.
That's
pretty good, Richard. Thank you. We're coming in via Skype this week again because, as we explained in the Geek Show, we're having problems getting them to the studio today because of the M5 freeway. Next week, hopefully, you guys will be in studio with us. So we will just push our way
through.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll just push our way through here and see what happens. I'm getting a bit of an echo of myself. Hopefully that's not too distracting for people. And I'm hoping it will also settle down. Now, we also have a brand new list of five this week. This is a listener-requested list of five from our friend Mike in Canada. And he's said, a list that basically is a phrase. He said, that sounded like a bad idea, but boy, were we wrong. So it's our list of five films that all sounded like bad ideas, but actually turned out to be okay. So hopefully you guys have got your lists ready to go. You can watch us record the show Film Actually live every Saturday. We start approximately 1:30 today. We're actually 10 minutes late, but because of technical glitches. We were actually here on time. We start approximately 1:30 Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time, UTC plus 11, geekactually.com/live. Come and join the chat room. All right. That all being said, let's get on with the show and say, what have we been watching this week? Josh.
Well, I've been watching, me and you talked about for a while, watching a film called The Hole.
Yep.
Which is going to be my pick for the week. I'm not going to say it's a great film. It's hard because one of its kind of like advantages is the fact that I noticed it immediately when it came on the Blu-ray because it came in both a 3D and a standard Blu-ray on the one disc.
Right.
So I could tell this film was made for 3D. Like that was essentially what they were trying to sell it as. And there is a lot of 3D, I'm not going to say gimmicks. Gimmicks is mean, but 3D based shots and stuff like this. So some of it doesn't translate as well as I'm sure it would have on the 3D screen. But very interesting concept. Like it's probably the most interesting thing Dante's done in a while. It's far from perfect and the cast is a little annoying at times, but everybody's very realistic, like very real kind of personalities, very real kind of people. Yeah. So you can kind of really believe the characters. But again, it's a cute little M-rated horror film. Like it's not very gory and it's not very violent, but it is kind of scary in some ways. And yeah, like I said, it's nice to see him do anything that isn't bad.
That's fantastic. I actually really want to see The Hole.
You'll get a chance.
I'm gonna have to borrow that off you because
she said.
Nice. We carry an explicit tag for those who are wondering. And look, there's a product placement in my camera. I'm just holding up my wonderful Geek Actually mug, which you can buy at cafepress.com.au/geekactually. Sorry. All right, Richard, what have you been watching?
Look, I don't know what I've been doing this week. I haven't actually watched much of anything, apart from the movie that we're reviewing today, which I saw this week.
Yep.
I also saw, and we'll probably be talking about this in a second, the new Three Musketeers film.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in just a sec.
I've not been doing much this week. I think I've just been catching up on a lot of writing.
Fair enough, and you write an awful lot.
I think I do.
I think Jorge over at spotlightreport.net is the one who refers to you as the machine.
Yeah, he's not the only one who's accused me of that. And I hope the quality...
Your girlfriend as well?
Yeah.
That's what she said.
She's in the chat room, dude. apart from being a machine in both the writing circles and in the bedroom, apparently... but hopefully the quality is not reflective of machine in both of those instances.
Fair enough. We just had a question in the chat room, which is actually nothing to do with movies, but we should address this. Zed has asked, what board software do we use that keeps crashing on us? It's actually Boinks TV is what we're using, which keeps crashing.
It's very good software. It's just that
fantastic.
Everything crashes.
Yeah, everything crashes, and literally running four pieces of software to make the feed happen, and they sometimes just don't play nice together. If we were still doing it the old-fashioned way, which would be fed from one computer to another, we had a lot less board crashes. So anyway, we'll just keep moving. All right, look, let's do this. What have we been watching? Very quickly, I said, what was I watching? Oh, yeah, Richard, you inspired me. I had to go off and watch Can't Buy Me Love again.
Yeah.
So I watched that again, and look, it's still cute. It's not a great film, but it's cute.
I've been finding a lot of those films that I'm going through watching from that era are cute, but they're not.
Yeah, it was the era for it. They were kind of fluffy puff pieces, really.
I kind of miss that those movies exist.
Yeah. Look, it's really fun to watch from a time capsule point of view because here you've got Patrick Dempsey, who is now McDreamy, and all the girls swoon over him, and he was just such a dork when he was young. And it's also really interesting to see a really, 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 really young Seth Green.
Because
He's literally what? 10, 12, something like that. He's very funny in the film. So it is worth seeing for a couple of little time capsule pieces. The other film I watched, well, we seem to be, you and I are in sync with this 80s thing. I watched Wildcats with Goldie Hawn, which I really enjoyed. Again, that film actually is quite a good film. And I really enjoyed watching that again. And there was one other one that I cannot remember off the top of my head, so I'll have to pass up. But let's talk about Three Musketeers.
Let's do it. Do we have to?
Yeah, we do. Just briefly. Look, we're not going to feature review it, but we'll talk about it briefly. This is Paul W.S. Anderson's big 3D epic version of Three Musketeers. We saw it this week, all of us at a media screening. And I'm going to start off by just saying that I thought this was pretty trashy. Pretty trashy fare.
I think pretty is giving it a little bit too much credit, Dave.
Well, no, actually, I thought the film was very pretty. That's to be very fair. I thought it was very pretty.
As I've said before, you can polish a turd as much as you want, dude. It's still a turd.
I've tried to polishing turds. It's not as clean as it sounds.
Yeah. What did you use to clean it?
Yeah. It was kind of like it was a damp cloth.
Yeah, that wouldn't have worked. Anyway, Dave, sorry, going somewhere with the show.
No, I was waiting for your opinions on Three Musketeers. I actually thought, look,
I think my opinion
related it to shit.
Let me just bring up another one of our league members and say David Longo at damngoodcup.com summed it up for me perfectly. He leaned over to me 5 minutes into the film and just said, "This is gleefully silly." And I just went, yeah, that's exactly, I don't think the film is actually even trying to pretend to be a quality piece of work. It's just having fun with itself.
And you know what? That's fine. They can call it whatever they want. But here's my list of problems with the film. Number one, Mila Jovovich. Just fucking stop putting her in films.
Get out of my house. Wait, I'm in yours. Sorry.
Yeah, no, like I'm sick and tired of her being in every film that he does, in the same way that I hate Helena Bonham Carter in every film that fucking Tim Burton makes. I'm also sick of seeing her slide across the ground and have things shoot at her. I am sick of her jumping off buildings or any such other things to create an apparently dramatic scene. I'm sick of generally the fact that he just takes any movie he wants, takes it to a bizarre location and a complete over-the-topness, and apparently sells that as some kind of a movie format that we should watch because it's just silly fun. No, it's not silly fun. It's just plain silly. And then on top of that, I don't enjoy films like this because I spend most of the time just trying to figure out what exactly we're doing with the film. Like, I'm kind of like, is there going to even be a bother to sum up this plot, or are you just going to end? And also, have you noticed in the last two films he's done, he's ended them both exactly the same way? Like, is this becoming a format that he's planning to run, or is he just having a laugh at everybody's expense?
Everything that P.W.S. Anderson does is formulaic. I mean, everything he does is a repeat of the last film, just in a different setting. The man is not creative. Let's be very clear.
Yes, but I don't like giving people like that credit, so I'm not going to say that I enjoyed this film, because at the end of the day, the only thing I enjoyed doing was laughing at this film.
Fair enough. Richard, I believe you have a completely different take on this.
Yeah, too. I quite enjoyed it.
Dude, cool.
You're
wrong, but you know.
No, I think you're both wrong. I think you've missed the point of this film. I think it's a satire. No,
it's a political satire.
Does it move the human condition forward, though, Richard? That's the question.
No, look, the thing is, at the end of the day, I went in expecting this film. I won't say too much in it now, because it may turn up later in the show. And it's a film that I went in fully expecting it to be a complete pile of trash, and it was, and I loved every second of it, because it was a good old-fashioned swashbuckling adventure that I haven't seen in a long time, and I really, really enjoyed it.
Look, to its credit, I will say that it's better than the Disney version, which I hated, and it's better than that trash that came out.
That did have a good Bryan Adams song in it.
I hated that film. And there's better than that trashy version, The Musketeer, that came out. Was that Peter Hyams or something who directed that? I can't remember now. I can't even bother looking it up. But that trashy film that came out a couple of years ago. So it is better than those.
And I should say, this very week, to coincide with the release of the Paul W.S. Anderson version, Asylum have released a film called Three Musketeers.
Of course they have.
Which is like this kung fu futuristic thing as well.
Yes.
I would have to find that one, I think. Look, I just look at it and just go, I am a big fan of the Richard Lester 70s versions, Three and Four Musketeers. I thought they were actually quite good. But the problem I have with the Paul W.S. Anderson film is the fact that he wasn't willing to trust the source material, and he had to go and just make it enormous and big and throw in airships and anything else he could think of just to make it, because he obviously didn't trust the fact that Three Musketeers is a good, fun, swashbuckling tale. And
this is the thing. We've seen that tale so many times already.
Well, my other question is, why are we bothering to remake this film anyway?
Because Paul W.S. Anderson hasn't made it before.
Ah, is that what it is?
And he hasn't made it in 3D before.
Now, with that being said, the 3D was actually quite effective. I didn't see Afterlife, Resident Evil Afterlife in 3D. I saw it in 2D.
I saw it in 3D. It didn't make it any better.
No, I'm saying the 3D was supposed to actually be headache-inducing in that film.
Yeah, the whole thing was headache-inducing.
Yeah, I think there's very little you can take away from that film, apart from a headache.
Hello, Susan, in our chat room says, I thought it was fun and great costumes. Look, costumes were great. As I say, the film was pretty. There's no doubt that the film looked pretty. It was empty. There was nothing to it. That was the problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think you're both fools.
Okay, that's fair.
There you go. That's my review.
And as I said,
Josh and David, why are you making this personal?
Making it personal. You made it personal as soon as you stepped into the room.
And as I've said many times on this show, everybody has their own opinion, and opinion.
Oh, fuck you, David.
Everybody's opinion is valid. I think Richard and Susan in our chat room are probably alone on this one.
I've lost that room, so I'm.
But they haven't actually shouted out yet. But yeah, look, I would say if you are looking for swashbuckling fun, there's probably other things that you can look for. But
there's probably better things you can do with your life. Just saying.
Yeah. Look, it's not the worst film I've ever seen in my life, but it's definitely not one of the best. Let me put it that way.
And this is one of the stranger comments I've heard on the whole debate we're having here. Chippy Takatana.
Let's call him Trip.
Trip from now on says Miller has weird nipples. Hey.
I didn't actually see them in this movie.
They're not in the movie. There's a fair bit of cleavage, but.
Which is amazing because she has no boobs.
Yeah.
So that's a miracle of science that they managed to get anything happening.
It's a miracle of gravity. I think there are some very pretty girls in this film as well.
Yeah, except that was actually one of my issues with the casting. What was with casting? D'Artagnan was some valley boy, and the girl looked like she was straight out of the mall.
I love that it actually appeared like she was straining to read cue cards that were slightly off camera. Yeah, like, actually got that feeling.
You had Juno Temple in there. She was the queen. She's going to be huge. She's been in a bunch of stuff.
Yep.
The last few years, and she's going to be in Dark Knight Rises, so she's one to watch as well.
I'd like to point out that there's also, if you look at the IMDb listing for this film, 1, 2, 3, 4th credit down is is an actress called Helen George, and she is listed as just blonde.
Yeah, and I saw that when I was looking.
I love that. I will say that the best thing in this film for me probably was Ray Stevenson as Porthos. I'm a big Ray Stevenson fan. I thought he was the best thing in this film, quite frankly.
Yeah, he works quite well. I think I did have a few problems. Aramis and Athos, I think it was Athos in particular, was a bit deep voice and... Yeah. A little bit.
Matthew McFadden. Yeah. He sounded like he was putting it on.
Every single thing he said was deep and brooding.
He sounded like he should be doing ads.
Yes.
Valvoline.
Can you imagine that in just the middle of the Three Musketeers? You know what this cannon needs? It needs to be oiled with Valvoline.
Yes. And can we also talk about the fact that Orlando Bloom turned down doing another Pirates film to do this?
Yeah, that was my comment.
You're welcome to it, Josh. It's brilliant. I can't believe it.
I just looked at him, and he's just playing this bizarrely,
you know what?
Unmaniacal bad guy.
It was better than Pirates 4.
I disagree.
Yeah. Yeah, no, me too.
Pirates 4, I was bored shitless through the last half of. This I enjoyed.
No, I disagree. I thought Pirates 4 was nowhere near the other pirate, you know, the first Pirates of the Caribbean or anything, but I thought it was an okay, fun... That, to me, is more of a fun, swashbuckling film than this was. This was kind of a waste of time.
Yeah, but clearly you've never been to Singapore.
All right, let's move on, guys. I think we've got a mixed reaction here. I would actually say, if you want to see this film, the 3D doesn't warrant the cost of the price of admission. Watch it on Blu-ray.
Agreed.
And Freak just says, I'm on a horse.
Fair enough. And I am the man that your... What is it? I am the man that your man could be?
I'm the man that your man you could be. Look at him. Look back to me.
All right, let's talk about...
Cheers to Paul W. Anderson. Look at his film. Look at yours. Look at this other film. Now look back at yours.
This
your
is film, the film
could be like that.
This is the film that your film could be.
God, I hope not.
Let's do a featured review. Let's talk about something a little bit bigger than The Three Musketeers. Let's talk about Contagion, directed by Steven Soderbergh. Now, how many more films does Steven Soderbergh have in him before he retires? Does he know? Do we know?
Well, he's got another 7 coming out next year, I think. He seems, if you look at his internet movie database listing, he has a movie out like every 6 months.
And this is the man who says he wants to retire because he's got no more stories? Pardon? What?
Exactly. He's prolific.
Oh, dear.
Oh. That's one word for it.
But when you look at his listing, and I just want to say this before we get into this, look back at the last 10 years. When was the last great Steven Soderbergh film that you saw?
I'm just going over his filmography right now. Hold on. Let's have a look here. Where is his?
Take it away.
I'm trying to find it. Hold on one second. What? Oh, wait a minute. I'm on the wrong listing. That's why. Okay, so Steven Soderbergh. Let's have a look at his history and say, as a director, so he's got lots of producer credits as well, but as a director... going back from now, so we'll go backwards, all right? He's got Contagion, today's film. He had The Last Time I Saw Michael Gregg, which I've never...
I don't even know if that's out yet. I think that might be one of those ones that'll come out later this
right.
year.
Right, I haven't heard of it, so there you go. Yeah. And Everything Is Going Fine, documentary feature. The Informant, which I actually quite liked.
Was fun, but it not was great.
I didn't think it was fantastic, but I did enjoy it.
I did enjoy it. The Girlfriend Experience, which was one of his little low-budget indie experiments, which was boring as fuck. Can I tell you that?
Even with Sasha Grey, it was boring.
Even with her taking her clothes off, especially that scene.
Well, let's face it, it's nothing we haven't seen before.
No, exactly right. Except she was sporting some 70s bush in that, let me tell you. Now, sorry to get off on the sidetrack.
We do contain an explicit rating.
Of course we do.
Just to remind you.
Sorry, we reviewed... that quote, by the way, comes from Get Him to the Greek. Josh and I remember that, don't we? Shay, part one and two.
That would touch the fairy wall.
That's right. Yeah, that's stroke on the wall. Shay, part one and two.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it wasn't very well received.
No. Ocean's 13.
Stupidest of the series, yeah.
Yep. The Good German, which I didn't actually see.
I saw, and it was a little flat. It was kind of going for this sort of to feel like a 1940s, I think that was the one.
Yeah, the one where he's a German soldier.
Yeah, and I was trying to feel like that was, it was Clooney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the one. After The Good German was Bubble, which was another one of his little indie films.
I'm not seeing Bubble.
No, actually. Neither have I. I kind of avoided it, actually. I don't know why. So we got Bubble, and then there was Ocean's 12, which I also thought was quite weak.
Yeah, look, I think anything beyond the first Ocean's film was quite weak.
Yeah, I agree. I think the first Ocean's film was quite good. So let's just skip to it a little bit, because we can go back.
I mean, really, when you look at it, I think Traffic was the last... great Steven Soderbergh film.
I disagree, because Ocean's 11 was actually after Traffic, and I liked Ocean's 11.
Actually, Ocean's 11, I didn't like Traffic, but I think it was considered highly, and it was his big ensemble piece.
It's really interesting, because if you look at that year, so 1998, we've got Out of Sight, 1999, The Limey, 2000, Aaron Brockovich, 2000, Traffic, 2001, Ocean's 11. What a couple of years for him.
Yeah, I mean, like or hate those films. And really, because when you look back before that, he'd done a whole lot of indie films.
Yeah.
And Out of Sight was where it really started. He had Clooney and J-Lo Lopez. In that.
Yeah.
And Clooney wasn't huge in 98. He was getting there. Like, he'd done...
He was on ER,
and he'd done From Dusk Till Dawn and a few other things at that point. But I think it was with Out of Sight that he got launched into the stratosphere.
Yeah,
well, because it's one of those films that hit audiences that weren't just people like us.
Yeah.
Like, it was one of those big films where it was like you had this steamy romance and, you know, every male's got a really good story and, you know.
And we realized that J-Lo was better at the whole acting thing than she was at singing.
Well, yeah, actually,
whoa, back it up, actually, because if we want to go back on J-Lo's career, she was an actress first. She was an actress in Out of Sight and U-Turn and so forth, and then she became a singer. It's so weird because everybody talks about her being a singer now. She was an actress first.
She'd already had a music career at the time Out of Sight came out.
I don't believe so. I think her first album actually came out after that. I think the whole J-Lo thing and her starting to sing. And do the research, but I think you'll find that she was actually an actress first because she had done stuff like Anaconda, and she'd done U-Turn and a bunch of films.
Oh, man, Anaconda.
Oh, Anaconda. Special, so when we say acting, film. Though.
Yeah, I didn't say she was a great actress. I said she was an actress. All right, let's talk about this film. So after a period of time where we basically say that he's been kind of floating in the wilderness, he now comes out with Contagion, which...
give us a rundown of Contagion.
Let's do that rundown real quick, and then we'll show a trailer, and then we'll talk about this. So Contagion, directed by Steven Soderbergh, written by Scott Z. Burns, stars Matt Damon, Lawrence Fishburne, Kate Winslet, Jude Law, Marion Cotillard, Jennifer... Now, Ely, I think, is how you pronounce that.
That's what we're running with.
According to IMDb, it's pronounced E as in triple E, and then Lee. It's pronounced, it's spelled E-H-L-E.
Is she a scientist?
Or yeah, she was a scientist. The one that, injected herself.
She was the scientician.
The scientician. She's the one that looks like Meryl Streep. Quite frankly.
Yeah. You know, she was definitely like, Susan said that to me in the movie. She looks like a young Meryl Streep.
Yeah. And I quite like her as well as an actress. Bryan Cranston, Gwyneth Paltrow, and Elliot Gould. And just about every other character actor working in Hollywood today.
Yeah.
Contagion follows a rapid progress of a lethal airborne virus that kills within days. As the fast-moving epidemic grows, the worldwide medical community races to find a cure and control the panic that spreads faster than the virus itself. At the same time, ordinary people struggle to survive in a society coming apart. And the source is Warner Brothers on that. And I don't know if that entirely does the film justice, but we'll talk about that in just a minute. Let's play the trailer and then we will come back and talk about this. So here's the trailer for Contagion.
It was a groundbreaking ceremony for a new factory.
Did she mention seeing anyone who was sick? Anyone on a plane at the airport?
No, she said she was jet lagged.
The average person touches their face 3 to 5 times every waking minute. In between, we're touching doorknobs, water fountains, and each other.
Beth! Mom? No, go up to your room, honey.
So we have a virus with no treatment protocol and no vaccine at this time.
You had a seizure this morning, Beth.
Is she
before?
A history of seizures? No. Allergies?
As of last night, there are 32 cases.
Unfortunately, she did die.
Can I go talk to her?
Mr. Armoff, your wife is dead.
What are you talking about? Okay. What happened to her? What happened to her?
Is there any way someone could weaponize the bird flu? Is that what we're looking at?
Someone doesn't have to weaponize the bird flu. The birds are doing that.
Watch this. It's transmission, so we just need to know which direction.
On day one, there were 2 people, and then 4, and then 16. In 3 months, it's 1 billion. That's where we're headed.
They're calling out the National Guard. They're moving the president underground.
People will panic.
Get away!
It will tip over.
The truth is being kept from the world.
Cook your samples, destroy everything.
Hello. I need you to get me the names of everyone who serviced this room. It's an emergency.
You can't panic now.
I know.
I'm gonna get you home.
I got people too, Dr. Cheever. We all do.
Don't talk to anyone. Don't touch anyone. Stay away from other people.
Get back in your car.
We're not sick!
It's figuring us out faster than we're figuring it out.
It's mutated.
All right, so we've had the chat room say it looks just like Outbreak,
you are so wrong.
Oh, yes. And we will talk about that. Okay,
there is a monkey.
Several, right. In fact.
I'm gonna start us off on this one, and then you guys can chime in, see what you think. I actually quite like the film. Let me start by that. I quite like the film, but it's not a masterpiece. It's not brilliant, and it's very, very clinical. The whole film is done in a very cold, clinical style. There's not a lot of emotion, and that's the one thing that's missing from this film. You would think with this sort of outbreak happening, there'd be a lot more emotion in this, and there isn't. Soderbergh has gone for a very clinical nature to it. And with that being said, the science feels very real. But I just don't know how well that's going to grab you, although it has done fairly well at the box office. A couple of things that I really did like about it was I really liked Kate Winslet in it. I thought that was a very sensitive story, the with her ultimate... You see it in the trailer where she says she gets sick. I didn't like Jude Law. I thought Jude Law was a wasted opportunity. It could have been a great character, and I thought he just... I thought it was badly written, and he didn't know where to go with it. What are your thoughts on this so far?
Well, me and Richard actually share a very similar thing, which is that we felt the film was very flat. For the first about 30 minutes of the film, I just didn't care. I had no interest. I was like, it felt empty. It felt like it was trying to tell a story and it was planning to build to something. But it was like someone, Soderbergh, was standing slightly off to the side going, just wait, just wait. Don't worry, it goes somewhere. It goes somewhere. I was at the point where I was just like, I've seen Contagion films. I prefer them to move quicker, but I'll wait. And I did wait. And when you start to get into sort of things starting to become more chaotic and so on and so forth, I started to connect to it a bit more. Like you said, I felt a huge problem with the emotion of the film and the fact that you didn't... You know what it was? It was the fact that you didn't get time to connect with any character because you had so many stories playing out at the same time. So you built no emotion towards these people because there were so many people involved in it and it was on such a large scale. And that's one thing I will give him credit for. The scale of this film is impressive. Having it worldwide, having you sort of feel the worldwide nature to it was really good. And the thing that I give him a lot of credit for was kind of almost making a statement against this attitude people have towards the modern kind of like CDC kind of a situation. The fact that people have lost faith in this as a concept, and I don't think that's a fair thing to do. Like ever since, the late outbreaks of bird flu and stuff like this, the media was responsible for the fact that this got blown out of proportion, Absolutely. Not the CDC. They were doing their job and doing it exactly the way they should have. It's the fact that people reacted to it was the problem.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to control... the situation. It's not... It's...
Exactly. And you can't do rash decisions. You can't throw things out like people want you to. Like people start jumping up and going, you're not working fast enough. Well, they don't have a choice. Essentially, if they move too quickly, then they may lose everything altogether. And this is something that he was very careful to keep control of in this film. My problem is that I'm sick of seeing Traffic again. I'm sick of seeing the same goddamn film that I've seen over and over again from this man, essentially playing out a whole bunch of characters with very little connection. See, in Traffic, it works because you get emotionally connected to these characters because these characters are connected. In this film, no one's connected. These people are a random selection of people throughout the globe that are all suffering from a bunch of issues, which means that there is no connection at the end of this film. There is no part where it all kind of comes together again. And when you get to the end of this film, you're left with nothing but a bland emotion and him trying to very quickly pawn off emotion through one character and then move to the next character and show their emotional connection. It's like what made Traffic work was that all these people that you thought were completely unconnected were connected by the end of the film and they were all connected by the circumstance. With this, you don't get that.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
You just get coldness by the end of the film.
I talked about this with my lovely wife, Katie, last night. We were talking about it. She hasn't seen the film yet, but we were talking about the clinical nature of it. And she was actually saying that one of the things she loved about the film Outbreak, and it's something I agree with her, the Wolfgang Petersen film, is that even though it is a fluffy popcorn summer film, which is basically the fluffy popcorn summer film version of Contagion, she said there was an imminent danger in Outbreak, which is they were going to nuke the town. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so there was a sense of what's the word I'm looking for? Momentum in the film because they had to solve this before they nuked the town, you know, and wiped everybody out. Contagion doesn't have that. There's no sense of imminent. I mean, yes, people are dying, but we're not connected with any of those people. You know,
we're seeing it on a global scale. We're seeing it more like a newspaper, more like a news feed.
Well, what we're
than
seeing,
we
we're,
are actually a film.
I was about to say we're actually seeing it through the eyes of the CDC, so it's impersonal.
You could literally hold a mic to these people and do these do their dialogue as interviews. How clinical this film is. Now the clinical side of it, the science side of it, is one of the main reason I kept watching because I was like, I want to see where this goes.
Yeah.
And they were keeping it so traditionally, science based that you were kind of like, well, what would happen in this situation? It's more like a what would happen if this broke out? Like,
exactly.
What would happen if this?
And I can't remember if I said it to Richard or if I said it to my wife, but I said it's like reading a Marvel comic, a what if comic, where you sit there and go, what if a worldwide epidemic broke out? You know, and it's like, and it's not looking at it from a personal level. You're just looking at it from a what if scenario, you know?
Like I said, I don't hate this film. I just think that it's so bland. Like, I walked out of it and I just felt exhausted. I felt like it was a really long film, and at the end of it, there was no payoff for me. As you were saying, Dave, about Jude Law's character, it's interesting that this has kicked up any problems at all, because people have been saying, oh, they're taking an attack at bloggers. I actually felt the complete opposite. This just felt like the old school way you would use a tabloid newspaper man. Like, this is just a guy who's spreading rumors. It was not blogger based. It's just, in this day and age, that would be who would spread something like this.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Sorry.
Blogger. You're not a blogger.
You're not a blogger. You're just graffiti. Is just
graffiti with punctuation.
Graffiti with punctuation.
Just graffiti with blog punctuation. Yeah.
All right. So, Richard, what did you think?
Yeah. Look, I much of what Josh said, I think is true. I mean, look, I kind of wanted to go and I wanted to like this film and had been, you know, fairly well hyped before I went in. So perhaps that killed it. It's interesting that here in Sydney, at least, it's screening on IMAX as well, which is a really odd choice. So there's this, clearly this sense that it's trying to be big, it's trying to be epic, it's just trying to be this huge global thing.
Mm.
But I did have that problem as well. I did find it very cold and clinical, and in some ways that's also its greatest strength. Because it is establishing the virus as the villain and not the human beings in it.
HC Widget in our chat room said maybe that's the point. It's a reflection of modern world media.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. But the thing is, you know, and it is very cool. But I think it's great. It's a reflection of the modern world and anything. But at the end of the day, it's still a movie and it still has to entertain.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's very cool. And there is one character's head who is cracked open at the start of the film. If you watch the trailer, you can probably figure out who it is. And that is a very cold and clinical way. It's kind of shock tactics, but it is still surprisingly cold and clinical. But it's also frustrating, given that it's taken that cold, clinical approach, that he's overcast this film again. Mm. Like, it's kind of as though, look, you know, I'm Steven Soderbergh. I can attract all these people, which I'm still not quite sure why, but when we look back at his career from the last 10 years, he hasn't made any great films yet. Actors still seem to be dying to work with him. Just because they all can work with him or want to work with him doesn't mean that they all should, at least not all at once.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first half hour of this film, I was watching it going, oh, look, here's somebody else. Oh, look, there's Kate Winslet. Oh, look, Marion Cotillard's turned up. Oh, look, there's John Hawkes. And then he just disappeared. And then I think you said to me on the night, David, Elliot Gould's character just disappears.
And never gets any resolution at all.
And he's a fairly major character.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that's true to life, that these people do their contribution to the cause and then that's it. You never see from them again. But still, as a dramatic piece, there's no resolution to that. But, you know, I just felt that that kind of stunt casting was a little on the nose, but Soderbergh does deal with them reasonably well, and he does establish all those pieces to the puzzle quite quickly. And I think that's where the film works at its strongest, that in him sort of going, right, this is what's happening here, this is what's happening there, this is what's happening over there. And he does, you know, he did use that very antiquated thing of putting, you know, population, you know, 8.6 million London, you know, on the screen. And that felt really on the nose as well.
Oh, I thought, dude, yeah, no.
You know, that's been played out so many times as well. That felt a little clumsy. It looked like my first film.
Absolutely,
you know, kind of thing.
And I know that this is like a terrible thing to bring up, but the text—it was just too large, and it was a weird choice.
It was in your face.
Can you imagine how big that text would look on an IMAX screen?
IMAX screen, absolutely. Yeah. And the thing is, but getting back to someone like Jude Law, he is the most frustrating element to the film for a number of reasons. But one, he's the most intriguing character because he's the closest the film comes to having a political point.
Mm.
He is, you know, jokes about bloggers aside, he is the one that does kind of bring in the whole... The tagline to this film on the poster is something like, nothing spreads faster than fear.
Yeah.
And, you know, he is the core of that film. He is the how the fear is being spread. The problem is they've underwritten him completely.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do with it. It's like Josh said, he's like a reporter from an old film, and they've just kind of put him into the 21st century situation. He keeps spouting out this figure, my 12 million followers. Yeah. You know,
No, not just followers, 12 million uniques.
12 million uniques, you know, so bloggers will know what that means. But, you know, at the same time, for some reason, he's doing an Australian accent by way of Cockney Ragamuffin. What's that about? They've given him a chip, you know, a crooked tooth just because it's a character thing, because bloggers don't get out much, obviously, so they have crooked teeth. I don't know quite if they knew what to do with him, and I think that's the problem with the film generally. It kind of set up this great scenario and then didn't know what to do with it.
It's like somebody sat down. It's great in concept, because essentially what they've tried to set up in concept is that they've gone, we need to create a contagion film, a film about viruses and so on and so forth, but we need to avoid all the cliche stuff. We need to avoid shock tactics like putting large amounts of, you know, death and violence on screen. Like, there is so little actual coverage of people dying in this film. It's all about what's happening around the death, around the things like that. And it's like, though that's a very interesting concept, like I said, it plays out very differently from a film. And because it's kind of going for this kind of almost documentary kind of a filmmaking, essentially the problem is that none of the dialogue worked for me, because you've got these characters that aren't connecting to their characters. They're reading lines because they've only got 15 scenes each person. Yeah. And essentially there is no character building. You know, apart from your main few characters, all the rest of the characters wouldn't need more thing than you're this person, you're doing this, and this is your line. And essentially the character's not building into their character because they don't have that much to do in the film because you have such a large cast. So no one feels like they're really in their role. They just feel like they're there to do their lines and move on.
And I think Marion Cotillard's character is one of the ones that I found the weirdest, because she's got this subplot, and this is a minor spoiler, but at one point she's kidnapped and she's taken back to a village. And it's kind of like the death of 25 million people across the world was not enough for this to be a dramatic tension. We had to throw in this sort of abduction subplot to kind of cook it along. And it's kind of like there's all these little extraneous
subplots, and then it never went anywhere.
And they never went anywhere.
I agree. The Marion Cotillard character was the most useless character in this film.
Absolutely. Need to be there. You could have taken her out and it wouldn't have mattered.
And this is not a long film. This is only about an hour 40-something.
Mm.
So, you know, for a movie this is this big and this epic, there could have been so much more character development. I mean, I think if there is a point to this film, it's that the whole about the spreading of the fear and information, it's just as much of a killer as the virus itself. Mm. But it's a really labored point, and it seems to do it with the use of all these characters. It's almost as though he cast the film first and then wrote the script around all these actors he now had available.
Freak has actually said in our chat room, it says, about the reason why these actors don't work for us, says, is it because the fame of the actor overshadows the point of the movie? And then he goes on to say, a good actor makes you forget that they are who they are in real life.
I agree with that, but I think most of these actors did their best in the roles that they had.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, you've got someone like, you know, I think a great actor in there was John Hawkes, who is like the indie king at the moment. He's in everything. Mm. He was in Winter's Bone. He was in Drive recently. We saw him. And he's turning up in everything. And he was just playing a John Hawkes-ish sort of character as a janitor. Has about three scenes in the film. I would have actually liked to know more about him.
Yeah,
me too. See him once at the start of the film and then once towards the end of the film, where his story would have been far more interesting than any of the major players that they had through there. And it's like, I don't know, I think Josh said it best. You didn't get enough of a sense of motivation from any of these people to care enough. So when the film does come to some sort of conclusion, you're like, okay,
but at
sure.
the same time, it's like high school filmmaking worth of ending, because essentially you've just got these characters playing out these little happy moments of humanity at the end of the film to kind of balance what you've been going through, you know, throughout the rest of the film. And it's just, when I sat there and watched this at the end, it's almost like someone was going, well, we need to make you happy now.
Yeah.
Because we've shown you. And I'm like, no, the point was established. I've finished it. And it's like, there is a moment in this film, and this isn't really a spoiler because it has no merit to the actual film itself, has one of the scientists putting the disease into a container and then closing a lid and walking away from camera. And I'm like, that's done. That's it. That's your finish right there.
Yeah.
No, we got another 15 minutes worth of film we just didn't need. Yeah. Like, like, if you had thought that you needed to add these scenes on to make people happy, what was your point? Because yeah. I didn't need that.
Exactly.
I didn't need this resolution at all. These people got on with their lives. Yes, we know that. Yeah. Like, essentially, that's an established point just by the fact that people have survived.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah. And, well, we've got H.C. Widget in our chat room is saying maybe it should have been a TV series where we could slow it down and build more emotion. He probably yeah. has a point. This would have made it very interesting.
Oh, we've had that. We've had the TV show Survivor.
The
reality show. But there was a British TV show in the 70s called Survivor, which was excellent. It was recently remade, and it's exactly what it did. It was the how people got on with their lives after a deadly virus started to sweep across the earth and what they had to do. And it was almost procedural some weeks. It was kind of like, yeah, this week we've got to go out and find food,
yeah.
you know, because this is what happened. Oh, hang on, we've just suddenly realized we don't have electricity anymore or anybody to run it. What are we going to do? You know, and it's kind of like, all these realities slowly sunk in over the series, and that was, you know, that's been done. So it's kind of weird. Like, you've had all these great plague films. Mm. Soderbergh offers nothing new to the canon except this massive cast, which he doesn't really know what to do with.
Yeah,
and I don't want to sound negative because it is a solid film, but it's very underwhelming as well.
Yeah, I'm going to wrap up, and I'm going to say that I agree with you, Richard. I think it's a solid film. I just think it's because it's emotionally empty, it's not going to be for everybody. If you want to see a bunch of scientists running around looking at microscopes and you know, being very realistically trying to work out how to deal with a world plague, fine. This is a good film. You know, it's a good, solid film. But as a piece of entertainment, it's not particularly entertaining.
Yes,
exactly.
You know, so I'm going to say that, yeah, it's not the worst film you could see. In fact, I would recommend going to see this over Three Musketeers. But I just...
Depends on what you're after, Dave.
It does. It depends on what you're after. But I look at it and go, I could think, if I had a choice between this or going out and renting a copy of Outbreak, I'd probably go rent a copy of Outbreak.
Yep, absolutely.
So that would be my opinion. You guys have anything else on that?
Nope, I think you summed it up there, man.
You've wrapped it up. You've wrapped this puppy up like it was a Christmas present.
Put a bow on it.
Yeah.
All right, let's move into some news. What do you think? And after all that Outbreak news, here's some Muppets.
Would you look at that? Ah! We are the Muppets.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Me-me. And these are our biggest fans.
Yeah!
You excited for our big trip to L.A.?
There's somebody coming.
Excuse me. Good grief.
Disney presents...
You guys are so talented.
Check it out. Fart shoes.
The biggest event in Hollywood history.
The Muppet Spectacular! Yay!
That is awesome!
There's just one problem.
I'm gonna shoot straight. You guys aren't famous anymore.
Yeesh. I wish she'd shot a little more curvy.
Let's just start at the bottom and work our way back up to the top.
Can't you see I'm busy?
Come on, guys, let's go!
Step one.
Are you one of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Yes, I am.
Tour the world.
We should travel by map.
To Paris!
Step two. Rehearse the show.
I'm doing a duet with my new dance partner.
Hola.
Let's try that lift again, shall we?
The lift again. Okay, on my count this time, okay? In 3, 2, baby!
Step, final.
I believe in you and you and you and, well, all of you.
Aww.
And now, singing chickens.
Make the most sensitive. Distinguished.
Prepare yourselves for head bowling.
What? I have not signed off on this.
Celebrity filled.
Phenomena.
And sophisticated Muppet movie ever made. Ever.
Have a seat.
Thank you.
I think I'll stand.
Comfy.
This Thanksgiving.
Is this movie in 3D?
Nope. The Muppets are as one-dimensional as they've always been.
Hey, watch it.
Jason Segel, Amy Adams, Kermit the Frog, Miss Piggy, and introducing the newest Muppet, Walter. And the Muppets. Waka waka.
You've been replaced.
What? Hi-ya! Oh! The Muppets.
Say movie.
Say movie.
know, there's two. There's one dimensionalist. They've always been.
I love that. Look, I can't wait for this film. When's it coming?
We're not getting it till January.
I know, but, it sucks.
The US is getting it next month.
So anybody who's in the US, if you see this film next month, you have to write to us and tell us what it was like.
And tell us if it was as good as we think it's going to be.
Yay! Yay!
Moving right along.
All right, moving right along. Josh doesn't want to have fun with us, Richard. Now, Richard, sorry?
It's just a moopet.
It's a moopet. Richard and I were talking about this earlier this week. Josh, we haven't heard your opinions on this yet, but it has been announced in Variety.com that Sony has acquired the rights and they are going to produce the Assassin's Creed movie.
Well, interestingly enough, I actually said that I said quite a while ago, after I think it was the third or fourth incarnation of what is Assassin's Creed now, I said that it's interesting because this would work better for me as a movie than it does as a game, because essentially I've been playing the same goddamn game since the first fucking game, and I've just been adding small things onto it.
Can I summarize all the games quickly for you?
Go.
Run, 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 jump, 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 stab, stab, stab.
Yep, essentially.
And look awesome while you're doing it.
Yeah, and it's like essentially they've been playing out this epic storyline, which they're continuing to play out constantly because that's the easiest way to deal with, that's the easiest way to make money out of this is essentially just like, and don't get me wrong, they put so much effort into these games. I don't hate them for these games. I hate them for the fact that, like GTA, it's just one of those series that doesn't bother to get better or change anything because it doesn't have to. Essentially, they've got this crowd of people that are just on board no matter what they do, and essentially they're just doing the same thing over and over again and not trying anything different and essentially just throwing him to slightly different looking environments that are so incredibly well made. They're incredibly well researched. They spend a lot of time making these worlds, and I don't hate the art team and I don't hate the general kind of aesthetic. I don't even hate the storytellers, except for my only problem is that I feel like I'm playing through Lost, and I know you think differently about Lost, Dave, but essentially I feel like it's just one of those things where it's like episodic. I'm just playing the same thing over and over again, and I'm just being alluded to points, which we haven't touched on yet. Mm. Now, I've said this would make a great film, a series of films as opposed to games, yes, because I would have more fun because you're telling me a story as opposed to me having to gruel my way through a story.
To get to the bits of the story.
Exactly. Yeah. So I hope to God that they make this a film, and I hope to God they can do it well.
Okay, so now that this brings up a bigger question, though, which is Sony has acquired the rights to the Assassin's Creed movie.
Hey, so can I ask if we can just refer to this from now on in short as Ass Creed?
Ass Creed.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
All right. So Sony has acquired.
That's how we're talking about it.
Sony has acquired Ass Creed. Now the question is this: Sony actually owns Infamous, and they actually own Uncharted, and they actually own The God of War. Why is it they can't get their own goddamn games made into movies, but they seem to be able to make other people's games?
Well, if only Sony had some kind of film studio to. Oh, hang on.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting you bring that up, man, but I actually think it's about the strength of the title. And this is the interesting thing. It's like Infamous would make a great film, but it doesn't have the amount of people behind it because number one wasn't that popular, and number two is a fantastic game, but not everyone played it. You've got Uncharted, which they're farming around and they want us to make a film. But essentially, it doesn't have what Assassin's Creed has, which is just this endless faith. It's like Mario. It's like it doesn't matter what you do to it. If you put it out, it will sell billions. Mm. And essentially, that's why they've grabbed the rights to it.
Okay, let's just hope.
I think the other thing is just in terms of the strength of the title. Sorry to David.
That's all right. No, please.
I think the thing is with those games, Sony want to keep those divisions quite separate because they've got a good thing going with those titles. There is a danger if they make a movie and they fuck it up, it could kill what is their most lucrative gaming franchises that they've had in years.
Mm.
Yeah, well, I was about to say, like Josh just brought up how you could put out any Mario game and anybody would lap it up. Let's just hope that the Ass Creed movie doesn't turn out like the Mario movie.
Well, no. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, the Mario games, with a few minor exceptions, have always been quality and they've always been pushing at least what Nintendo's doing anyway. Mm. They've been pushing that format. But, yeah, look, I think Ass Creed is got a... God, I love that. it is simple enough to make, as Josh said, a great film. If they get someone clever to come in and write a good story around, because it's got this great mythos behind it, but in the games, we're just tediously playing out, trying to get to little bits of that. So if you actually had it in a narrative form...
Amen to that.
Because I actually like watching those cutscenes, which aren't really cutscenes.
Yeah, like, I wish there was a mode in the game where I could just turn off gameplay.
Yeah.
If I could do that, I'd probably really enjoy
which
it.
Which would be a movie, really.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
That was the joke.
Mm. All right, so question is...
I was explaining it to people.
Oh, right, okay, sorry, man.
So let's just summarize that, because I'm not sure what the final result was. Assassin's Creed, good idea, bad idea?
It's a good idea.
We're not going to just get another Prince of Persia?
We possibly are, but it's a good idea. Communism is a great idea, you know, in theory. In theory, and that's exactly what this is. It's like, in theory... you could make a good film out of this.
Fair enough.
We all know my stance is bitter and twisted on this whole subject.
And I
take
exception to saying that Prince of Persia was a bad film.
HC Widget in our chat room has said, speaking of games spin-off, has anybody been watching the Dragon Age web series that's just aired? It started this week.
Nope.
With what's her name? Oh, God, I can't believe her name has gone out of my head. The creator of The Guild. Redhead.
Still no idea.
Redhead, what's her name? She was in Dollhouse as well, one episode of Dollhouse. She's a big geek, big favorite. Can somebody in the chat room help me out here? What's her name?
You know, Felicia Day.
Felicia Day, thank you, yes. She's actually producing it and starring in it.
Is it Felicia Day?
Yeah, Felicia Day.
There you go.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you, HC Widget. He's also brought it up as well. I actually watched the first episode of it. It's a big promotional tool for BioWare, isn't it, who's doing Dragon Age?
Yeah,
they're doing this big budget web series with lots of special effects and makeup and everything else. It's all live action. And look, I'll be curious to see where they go with it. Felicia Day is talented. I mean, she's already proved that she can do basically a web sitcom with the Guild. So let's see.
Hey, speaking of TV series, this is in the show notes, and this might be just a bit of random news. I was reading this morning that The Punisher has been picked up by Fox has ordered a pilot of The Punisher.
Interesting.
Wow.
Mm.
So that means next year we might get a Punisher and an Incredible Hulk series.
Well, the thing is with the Punisher too, the storyline apparently is going to be that he's a cop by day and the Punisher by night, which since they've already fucked with the canon a little bit, but Frank Castle was originally a cop, so...
Yeah, but the whole thing about Frank Castle is you can't have him being a cop while he's being the Punisher. That was the whole point of it.
I think that someone in one of the forums I was reading pointed out that Fox wants their Dexter.
So
they want this sort of gritty kind of
look. You know, realistically, we should just take it back from Fox and give it to HBO. And though it will be, you know, basically the same show we've seen 1,000 times before, we will enjoy it because it'll be violent as shit, and that's essentially what we want in a Punisher storyline.
You know, and
HBO to make Punisher and Preacher a series. That's what we want.
And at the moment, quite frankly, the Punisher is actually back in the hands of Marvel. And have they learned nothing from Fox? Why would they want to sell one of their products to Fox again?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, Fox have had such a great run with their things. There was Daredevil, there was Elektra.
Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four, there was Rise of the Silver Surfer.
Wolverine.
Most recently, there was X-Men Origins, Wolverine. So I can't see what your point is, Dave.
The only thing that they've had any success with lately was the first two X-Men movies and X-Men First Class.
First Class, exactly.
Everything else they've touched has been crap.
And I think the first two X-Men movies probably had more to do with Bryan Singer than they did with than being a Fox property.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Because Fox wouldn't have had anything to do with it. They wouldn't have understood it. Bryan Singer came along and did it. And then when he left, Fox basically took over. And we know Fox does not do this well.
No.
So, they have no idea how to do it well, man.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure I'm happy about Fox doing a Punisher series, so we'll see more on that. I think it could go the way of this Wonder Woman series that they were trying to make as well.
I think, look, Fox has ordered a pilot. We'll see what happens after that.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of superhero pilots. We've had Aquaman, we've had Wonder Woman, now Punisher. So.
Can somebody please make that Wonder Woman pilot available? I want to at least see it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like watching a train wreck video.
Yeah, it's gone into the world of mythos at the moment because everybody's talking about it. We've seen photos from it. We've even seen that quick 30-second clip. But I want somebody just to put it up onto a torrent site or something so we can see it, you know?
Yeah.
Even
if it's not finished, I'd just be curious to see it see what a train wreck it actually was. Yeah. Anyway, look, the next story we were going to do was actually, I was actually going to play some video, but I went to my site to pull the video and realized it's gone. So it's already gone. But that was Marvel released another one of their one-shots. This time, a funny thing happened on the way to Thor's Hammer. Thank you, Richard, for making me aware that it was even out. And the guy who actually posted it up, it's no longer on his site.
Site still there? No,
it wasn't a site. He's still there. It's Twit Video. It was a tweeted out thing. And
yeah, it's going to be available on the Captain America Blu-ray, which is out this week, which is probably why they pulled it.
Yeah, well, it's not out this week here. Let's be clear. It's not out until December in Australia. So, So I would imagine, though, that once it comes out in America, that will be all over YouTube again. So,
yes.
But if for those who didn't get a chance to see it, it was basically showing Agent Coulson driving out to get to what is essentially the post-credit scene of Iron Man 2. And it's him stopping at a petrol station and his little adventure there. And it was awesome.
It was very awesome. You actually understand why Agent Coulson is so highly regarded by the rest of the Marvel Cinematic U at this point.
Yeah, so it was very good. So look for that on the Captain America Blu-ray, and I wish I could play you a clip. There are little clips still around from it on YouTube. You can find them, but they don't show you the whole film. They only show you like the beginning of it. It's like a little promo.
It's a nice looking film too.
It is. Well, it's like the Consultant. They're both really well shot. They're
beautifully shot. Yeah,
well put together. This one's actually better than the Consultant though, because it's not just two people eating. This actually has more to it. So it's actually pretty good. Now the story that wouldn't die. Akira has been greenlit.
Akira.
Oh, dude, so, I just don't know what I think about this anymore.
No, look, and the other thing I'm not sure about this is that, what's his name? The boy who was the star of Tron Legacy? Garrett Hedlund. He's in talks to play Kaneda. I'm not...
So better than Zac Efron, I guess.
Yeah, it's definitely better than Keanu Reeves. I don't want to see a live action of Akira at this point.
No.
I just wish
you know what
the only reason I'd like to see it. Sorry to interrupt, Josh. I just the manga is so epic; it's huge, and obviously the anime, as it is, as good as it is, touched on a fraction of that.
Exactly, and I was reading the article on Slash Film, and I actually agree with them. It's like, look, I still believe they're going to fuck this up, really, because a live action version of this is just such a bizarre concept. Like, if you've ever watched Akira, you will know there is stuff that I just don't know if we could do well with 3D graphics. Like,
and look, the thing is, even the Japanese can't seem to get live-action versions of the manga right.
No.
And I think the only anime is works best because you're doing things that can't be done in live action, even as Josh says, with the best CG animation. You know, that's what manga and anime are for.
Yep.
They're to do things that you can't. And, you know, this is something Walt Disney always said. He said that animation was bringing to life things that would be impossible in real life. And I don't know. This is such a very Japanese post-apocalyptic story born out of a country, the only country that is post-apocalyptic, let's face it. I don't think the Americans will understand the material in the same deep sense that the original.
Yeah, like
help me out with the original filmmaker's name.
Long, and I can't pronounce it properly. No, but look, essentially, my issue with it is exactly what you're touching on, man. It's like this film will be westernized,
absolutely, straight up.
We know that it'll be westernized, and the problem with it is that, like you said, you don't have to explain it when you're watching it in that. But the other great thing is when it was done by them and when it was
Katsuhiro Otomo.
I'm going to kick myself.
Yeah. No, but the great thing is they don't care what they don't stop to think about things like that. They don't go, oh, well, you know, like in this scene, his arm becomes a giant mess of metal and things. And somebody goes, well, hold on, that's not going to make sense to somebody in middle America. And they go, all right, well, let's just change it and make his arm grows really long and straight. Mm. And it's like, they would never have stopped to think about that because there was a vision involved, whereas we do.
Instead of giving him bikes, we got a deal from Vespa. So maybe they can all be on scooters.
Yeah, I think this is a bad idea. And I think Brad summed it up best for me on Twitter this week, where he said, if we all just stop talking about it, maybe it'll go away.
Yeah. Amen. Amen, man.
But I don't think that's going to happen somehow. I think for some reason, America has a hard-on to get this thing made, and I really wish they wouldn't.
I think they should check out the excellent Blu-ray of the animated film. Yep. And then go and get themselves the however many dozens of volumes there are.
Seven
volume of the massive, I think it's 2,100 page manga, and read that and know that life is good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. I think they should just leave it alone.
Mm. There we go.
Okay, we're going to finish news and then get into our list of five. We've got one more thing to cover, which is another trailer, and we have to play this. And this really is a visual for those who are only listening to audio. The link will be in our show notes. For those who are in our chat room, here is the Red Band trailer for A Very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas, which I can't wait to see. And this looks very funny indeed. All right, so here we go.
From Warner Brothers Pictures, this holiday season, experience Christmas like never before.
Merry Christmas!
I shot Santa Claus in the face. He's real, and I shot him in the face.
What the fuck?
I'm just gonna take a closer look.
Who are those guys?
Oh, shit!
Those kids put something in here.
Was it drugs? Was it semen?
It doesn't taste like semen.
Fuck a baby into me.
Okay, I will.
That's incredible.
New Line Cinema presents Babes, Dudes, Sex, Violence, Drugs.
What the F are you doing?
What?
My daughter's in there.
What?
Oh, shit.
What the fuck, Kumar?
You got my baby high.
Claymation.
Dude, awesome.
Jews, Mexicans, people of color.
Fuck ass bitch.
You lost your gangster grill.
Oh no.
How you gonna be a gangster and you lose your grill?
I'm not one.
And resurrecting America's sweetheart, Neil Patrick Harris.
Wish you a Merry Christmas.
How the fuck are you still alive?
What are you talking about?
We saw you get shot.
In that whorehouse?
In Texas.
You branded a prostitute.
Remember?
Oh yeah. And then I went to heaven.
Ah, oh, come on!
This is God.
Daddy, we need to 86 the MPH ASAP. He's getting a handjob in my club.
Jesus, what a cock block.
On November 4th.
Still a fight in the altar boys' room.
Prepare to celebrate. Yeah! A white Christmas.
Diaper emergency, oh!
A Very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas.
My baby is fucked on cocaine.
I need it.
What?
I need it.
I'm gonna love that film.
Is there anybody out there that this trailer didn't offend?
Oh, dude, I don't care. I hope it offends brilliant. Everyone. That's fantastic.
I hope that's just a tiny taste of the stuff that they could show.
Oh, dude, it's just so little that they could do to fuck that film up for me. That just looks so funny.
The little girl rubbing her teeth after she's got the cocaine. What a killer. Oh, man. It's not going to be for everybody, but those who it appeals to, it's going to appeal. All right. Let's pull ourselves.
Fortunately, that doesn't have an Australian release date yet, so please, please, please.
Yeah, please do get that released.
Please make sure that that comes out at Christmas, because that's the exact kind of film I want to watch at Christmas.
Absolutely.
That's my idea of a Christmas movie.
And if that makes me wrong, I don't want to be right.
I think we should all get to, if that it's out at Christmas, we should all get together with eggnog and watch that movie.
Yeah. I think we should have a tweet to see it first competition.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, let's round this show out with our list of five this week. And as I said, we received an email, and I'll read the email here. Where is it? It's this one right... Oh, where is it? Hold on a second. Where is the email that had this as our... Oh, God, I can't believe I've actually misplaced that email. I had one more email. It was actually from Mike from Canada, who basically said we should do that, do this list, which was five films that sounded like a bad idea, but boy, were we wrong. I actually have another one from Mike from Canada as well, which we will read on the show later in the feedback section, but not the one that actually mentions this list. God damn it. Anyway, now, many times in the past, we have heard about films getting announced, or we have seen stuff about films that are being made, and we've gone, oh, crap, why? You know? And then when the film comes out, we were completely wrong about it. And that's basically what this list is about. So five films that sounded like a bad idea, but boy, were we wrong. Okay? Who wants to start us off?
Josh has nominated me to start off, so okay. I'll do it.
That's what I do.
That's what he does. He's a generous man, and I guarantee this is not on anybody's list. Joan Rivers, A Piece of Work. It's a documentary.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's fair. I would have actually said, why are we making a documentary?
Yeah, Joan Rivers, I thought, why is this person interesting? She's just a plastic surgery freak. She's the punchline of a joke. It's the sort of movie we went along to, because we were bored and we wanted something to see, and it was on. And you find this woman who's completely fascinating, who's completely obsessed with work. This is a woman in her 80s, I think, now, who cannot stop working. And she cannot, to the point where she's got this big diary that's filled up every day. And she says, when this gets empty, she said, that, then I know it's over, because it means that I'm no longer relevant. And she, it's just the lead up to her most recent show, and I think it might have been Fashion Police before it went to air. Seeing the kind of trials and tribulations she went through to get that on air, but it also goes back and looks at her life, and you realize, just one, how influential this woman's been, two, how incredibly funny she is, and three, how much work she puts into being that funny. For those of you who have only ever seen her on the red carpets, going, oh my God, what's she wearing? There's so much more to that. And I actually became a fan as a result of watching that movie.
It's interesting.
So,
I used to be a really big fan of hers years ago, before all the weird plastic surgery. I used to think she was funny and outrageous. And over her later years, she doesn't quite do it for me anymore. But I think this sounds like a really interesting documentary. I'd like to see it.
And it's really good. Yeah.
Okay, you both have got to get a little bit closer into your mics when you talk. You're getting a little bit echoey for me. Okay?
Okay.
I found the email, by the way. So the email that inspired this says, Mike from Canada says, this year we saw Real Steel and Planet of the Apes, two films where people said bad idea, and then they turned out to be good films. How about a list of five?
Don't believe that at all.
Sorry?
At least not about...
You didn't like Real Steel. I know. Relax.
Just all making right. that apparent.
All right, Josh, you're number five.
Yeah. My number five is a documentary as well, actually. It's a film called Murderball.
Right.
Which is a documentary about dudes that play wheelchair basketball.
Yeah, no, I know the film. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, no, and it's such an interesting thing, because I looked at that and just went, why? And you watch this, and it's so interesting, not only on the fact that it's an amazingly interesting sport, because they basically play basketball like it's a Mad Max event, running into each other and shit like this. It's just absolutely manacle. But at the same time, just like how devoted these people are to it, and the fact that this is something that they can do even though they're in these wheelchairs, and the fact that they continue to be professional athletes, quote-unquote, because it's not exactly a huge sport. But, very touching, very surprising.
Fantastic. My number five is from the very early 80s. It's actually 2010, the science fiction film, because when we heard about this film coming out, we actually went, who the fuck is trying to make a sequel to Stanley Kubrick? And yep. And look, even though 2010 doesn't hold a candle to the 2001, and I've said it many times, as a sequel to 2001, it sucks. As a standalone film, it's actually pretty good. Yeah. And so when it finally came out, we actually quite enjoyed the film. But really, at the time, we were like, why would you even attempt this movie?
And do you know if the book, the Arthur C. Clarke book, came out before or after the movie?
It came out before, actually. And when I heard about 2010 coming out, I actually read the book. Because with the case of 2001, the book came after the movie. Because it was based on The Sentinel, and then he wrote the book based on the movie. Then he wrote his own sequel, which was 2010.
Right. I've always been a bit confused by that. Thank you.
Yeah, so when he wrote the book, I read the book, and after I read the book, I went, this actually might make an okay film, but it still was, why do you try and remake Kubrick, And he did, and to Peter Hyams' credit, he didn't. He'd made his own film. So, and he went his own way with it. So,
you know, I've not actually seen it, and it took me the longest time to like 2001 because it is a very differently paced science fiction film to everything you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Now I appreciate it, and I do see why it's good, and I do actually enjoy it on a completely different level by virtue of having watched so many other films since then.
Yeah.
Well, actually, have a look at 2010 if you haven't seen it, because 2010 is a very different film.
Yeah.
And quite good in its own right. All right. Richard's going first. Is that right?
My number four? Yeah. Yep. We've mentioned it before in the show, and I thought I'd throw it in just to be controversial. The Three Musketeers, 2011 version, Paul W.S. Anderson.
I don't agree with you, but that's all right.
Yeah, you don't have to. It's my list.
Absolutely.
And for all the reasons I said before, I went in, this is his last movie was Resident Evil Afterlife, and expected it to be as shitty as that. And, you know, we were all talking it down on the way in, and I still had a lot of fun coming out of it. So, boy, was I wrong in that case.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Josh, what were you wrong about? Number four.
Anyway, my number four is a very obvious choice, but I think it's a very powerful choice, which is Batman Begins.
Yes.
Realistically, man, we had seen so much shit come out of the Batman world, we just didn't care anymore. Like, when we found out they were doing another origin story,
yeah,
we were just like, who gives a shit? Like, I've seen Batman and Robin. I've seen that fucking tragic Batman film before that. What was the one with...
Forever?
It's Batman Forever.
Batman Forever, that was it. Yeah. Batman Forever, and I was just like, I don't even care. And I went in, and I was like, wow, that was fucking great. And so there, it's on my list.
Absolutely, I almost put it on my list for the same reasons.
Yeah.
I've got another Batman one. I'll come back to that in a minute. It's in number three. So I'll come back to that. All right, my number four is Die Hard, believe it or not. Because in the mid-1980s, when Die Hard came out, Bruce Willis was a comedian. And he had only done Moonlighting and some Blake Edwards movies, and he was a comedian. And when we heard he was doing a great big action film and we were starting to see clips coming out, we thought, what the fuck? You're trying to make this comedian an action star? This is never going to work. And boy, were we wrong. And now nobody even associates him with being a comedian anymore. They always think of him as the action star. Like J-Lo was an actress before she was a singer, Bruce Willis was a comedian before he was an action star. And if you go back far enough, nobody could believe Die Hard was what Die Hard was.
Yeah.
And you're right on that, by the way. I looked it up. She was an actress before she was a singer.
I know.
The joke was so good.
Sorry?
Yeah. Don't worry. Our joke was good. We were running with it.
Yeah. Fair enough. Okay. Richard, your number three.
My number three, and say what you want after this, but it's High School Musical.
Oh, God.
You're talking about number three, right?
Well, I mean, I suppose we can't count the first one because it was a TV movie. But let's just take the whole High School Musical series as a whole.
Okay.
Because, you know, I thought these were going to be pants. And in many ways, it is what made me fall in love with musicals as a genre all over again. And made me, it's a surprisingly well-made film. It's full of some surprisingly good humor in there, and I think that it's really easy to dismiss because it's a Disney musical twee thing. This is, you know, 10 years before Glee, and it actually did everything that Glee's doing now, but in a little bit more Disney-fied sort of clean cut sort of
way. I can't say I've ever seen any of the High School Musical stuff, so...
And I think that, you know, there's a huge part of your life that's now missing.
Freak in our chat room says, let's gag Richard now.
It gets better. It gets a bit more butch after this. I had Joan Rivers and High School Musical.
That's a pretty good list so far there. Josh, what's your number three?
My number three is another obvious one, and my last obvious one on my list, which is Pirates of the Caribbean.
Very good. That's actually higher on my list, so I'll come back to it.
Essentially, we're talking about a film based on a ride.
Absolutely. Ride.
And I was like, what? And then I was like, all right, that was really cool.
Yeah, that's fair.
Look, I'll say now, it's a little higher on my list, but I may as well talk about it now. No. Exactly the same reasons.
Just, we'll look, we'll I'll stop it. I'll stop and we'll come back to it.
Okay, let's do that then.
Okay, fair enough. My number three, I alluded to this before, is The Dark Knight. Because, quite frankly, I heard Heath Ledger was cast as Joker, and I went, what the fuck? And how wrong can any one person be? And I take everything back I ever said about The Dark Knight when I first heard about it.
Now it doesn't matter.
No, no, I think Heath Ledger is brilliant in that film, and I couldn't imagine it any other way. And yet, I remember when they were making it, all I could think was, this is just going to be so bad in every way.
Yeah, look, I actually wasn't optimistic about the sequel for all the reasons.
I was as well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was just kind of, I really loved the first one, and, you know, there was a big chance they were going to fuck it up. I don't think The Dark Knight's a perfect film. I think it actually has a massively flawed third act, where essentially you don't see either of you don't see the protagonist or the antagonist for about 20 minutes. And it's just a bunch of strangers on a boat saying, who should we blow up, him or him? And it's kind of like, who are these people? Why do I care? And then suddenly Batman and the Joker come back on. And it's like, you know, it could have had 20 minutes trimmed out of it there. And I think that they shot their wad too early with Harvey Dent.
Mm.
But fuck me, it's still a great film and it's still powerful. It's still one of the best pieces of dark superhero filmmaking you're ever going to see.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
All right, your number two, Richard.
My number two is, in the superhero vein, Iron Man.
Very good.
Because I didn't think much of it. I didn't think much of the Marvel films I had seen to date at that point, with the exception of, as we've said earlier in the show, the first two X-Men films.
Yeah.
I think both of them had been out by that stage, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'd already had the... did Hulk come for Incredible Hulk come first? I can't remember.
Incredible Hulk came first. No.
Iron Man came first.
Yeah, Iron Man came first.
So this was the start of what is now Marvel's epic journey, Road to the Avengers. And I wasn't expecting much. I'd seen a few clips. I'd seen Robert Downey Jr. This is before, I mean, Robert Downey Jr. was gaining traction again, but he hadn't really been tested as an action star or anything at this point. You know, we didn't know how funny it was going to be. I thought it could have been a big dumb film. This was a movie about a man in a mechanical suit. Yeah. It could have been shit.
Well,
and how wrong was I?
Well, the biggest issue I had with it was when I first heard Robert Downey Jr. because I said he's all wrong for Tony Stark.
Yeah.
How wrong could I be? You know.
Yeah, absolutely. And everything about the first Iron Man film sizzles. It's just, it's got just that little throwaway humor that's in there. The suit works. Oops, sorry, I just bumped the mic. The suit works, the special effects works, the storyline is great, all the ephemera around it, it sets up all the clues for the rest of the Marvel series. Mm. And in fact, it set the template for what would be the Incredible Hulk and Thor and Captain America and, of course, Iron Man 2 and all those films that have led up to what will now be the Avengers next year.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. You know. Josh, your number two.
My number two is a film I've talked about before called The Collector.
Oh, yes, you have mentioned this.
Now, when I first got this film described to me, it was described as a bad dude coming into a house and basically killing a whole bunch of people while torturing them, and I had been told it was really graphic, and I was like, great, so it's another film that essentially does the incredibly violent thing that we've seen, the Gorno-style film, and I'm going to sit through an hour and a half of these people being tortured in the house. And then I watched the film, and yeah, just as the quote goes, boy, was I wrong. It's like essentially a very clever film with some very interesting characters, and I was very impressed.
Agreed. I've got to see that film. I've got to see that film.
Yes, you do.
You have to see that film.
I do. Josh has been telling me about this film for ages now, so I got to see it. All right, let's start the cycle all over again. Is that right? No, my number two. My number two. My number two is The Social Network. Now, I know Richard disagrees, but all I can remember is all the build-up to this. I remember Josh and I actually talking about this on the show a lot, where we were mocking, basically saying they're making a Facebook movie. You know, it's like, what the hell is that all about? And why would you want to make a Facebook movie? And to actually sit down and watch it, and actually, when we first saw the first trailers start coming out for it, we went, there is actually something here. This could actually be very good. And I was very surprised because I actually really love The Social Network. And I know Richard disagrees, but I thought I was very wrong on that. I thought they actually managed to make a Facebook movie that worked.
Facebook.
It's getting late in the day.
Sean Connery's Facebook.
a Facebook movie that worked. And I know you disagree, Richard.
I disagree only because, and actually I had the opposite reaction going in. I was looking forward to it as a massive David Fincher fan. And also of a Trent Reznor fan. So knowing, having heard the score before going in, because Reznor being Reznor released all that stuff free online, having heard that, having seen Fincher's involvement, knowing the reputation of, quick screenwriter's name.
Aaron Sorkin.
Aaron Sorkin, knowing the reputation, all those things, I thought this is going to be great. And I ended up finding it to be just a movie. I've said this before on the show. I thought it was a fairly uninteresting story about a very uninteresting man with Asperger's. So played by a very uninteresting man as well. I don't think Jesse Eisenberg can act his way out of a paper bag. I don't think I've seen him playing anything other than his Zombieland character in anything. Yet. I haven't seen Holy Rollers. I've got that sitting on a shelf at home. He could play a completely different character in that. But I honestly just could not connect to anything about The Social Network. And I know you guys are coming from a very different place as well, because you've been obviously doing this geek show for a long time by the time the film came along. And I just wasn't connected to it on any level. But I can see... No, actually, I lie. I can't see why people think it's a great film, but... so many people have
tried
said it's a great
for a minute
film.
There, didn't you? You really tried to.
I did. No, I can't see why people say it's a great film, but so many people have said that it is that I have to just bow down on this one and agree to disagree with the rest of the world.
Fair enough. Josh is there with me, though, aren't you, Josh?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But that said, I am not looking forward to The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo for all those same reasons. I think Finch's best work is behind him because, Curious Case of Benjamin Button had its moments, but it was long, it was repetitive, but I think I will be really, and this looks like it's going to be a straight remake, I could be sitting here in a year's time saying, you know what, boy, how wrong was I about that Girl with Dragon
Tattoo. I'm right there with you, Richard. I actually have...
I'm really hoping that that's going to be a good film.
Yeah, I'm hoping for it, but I actually, in seeing all the stuff I've seen so far, doesn't do anything for me. Anyway, all right, let's do a quick round of number ones and then let's get out of here for the day. Number one, Richard.
Yeah, well, as I alluded to before, it's Pirates of the Caribbean.
It's also my number one.
Yeah, well, I think for the same reason, again, like I'm a massive, let me get this out of the way. I'm a massive Disney fan and I'm a massive Disneyland fan. I love the theme parks. I love them to death. Pirates of the Caribbean is undoubtedly one of the best rides there. I've ridden it a number of times whenever I've been to a Disney park that has it. It is an amazing ride. As a movie, I thought, what the hell? This has got disaster written all over it. When you heard all those stories leading up to the production about Michael Eisner saying, we can't have Johnny Depp looking like that, it's gay. And literally, I'm not, that is an actual quote, I think, from Michael Eisner. He said that he thought that Johnny Depp looked too homosexual and it wouldn't play to a mass audience. Well, how wrong was he?
Yeah, absolutely.
And how wrong were we to doubt that this film would be a good thing? I mean, the writers of Shrek, the first Shrek, got that anarchic sense of humor just like completely in there. It was a movie that kept you on your toes the whole time. You didn't know what was going to happen. There were lines like, just to throw away things like sea turtles, sea turtles, in reference to how, Johnny Depp escaped at one point. It's just a crazy, it's like the film taps straight into that part of my brain that I wanted them to make a movie out of.
Yeah.
It's a kind of like if you all would have played Secret of Monkey Island ago, it kind of, in many ways, it is the film of Secret of Monkey Island.
Absolutely.
That you wanted it to be. So that's great. It's a perfect pirate film, but, the sequel's patchy, that first film is still just literally, to use a pun, blew me out of the water.
Absolutely. And look, when I heard Jerry Bruckheimer had an idea to make a film version of Pirates of the Caribbean, I do disagree with you. I don't think the ride at Disneyland is an amazing ride. I've been on it many times. What it is a very interesting little boat ride which tells a story. It's not really even a ride.
It's what Disney would call a dark ride.
Yeah, it's a dark ride.
It is actually an intro. They want to take you, the whole point of Disneyland is to take you inside the movie.
That's right.
The staff there are not called staff, they're called cast members.
Yeah.
So everything's a show. You're going inside the thing. And that's what the reason I say it's a brilliant ride is because to me it's such an immersive thing. If you've never ridden this ride before, you come down this dark chute, you come, you know, dead men tell no tales. You suddenly come out of this dark hole where all the sort of creaking's been happening, and then there's these two giant ships firing at each other, and you're in the middle of it. And you think, my God, you know, if you think back to, I first rode that ride when I was seven. It was the most amazing thing.
Because I was about to say, they've actually redesigned the ride since.
And I have, and they've actually included Johnny Depp in the ride.
They put Jack Sparrow in and stuff now, which he was never in the ride originally. And look, it's a fun little ride, and it's great for kids, and you know, it's got lovely animatronic, you know, pirates and all this stuff. But when they said they were going to make a film out of this, I said, are you nuts? I mean, this isn't a movie. It's a ride. You know what I mean?
On the flip side, Haunted Mansion should have worked and didn't at all.
but I remember when I sat down in the cinema, I actually got advanced screenings to Pirates of the Caribbean. I sat down in the cinema and I said, oh, here we go. You know, and I got to tell you, I was on such a high when I came out of that film. It was unbelievable. I had so much fun. It was probably the most fun I've had in a cinema in 10 years. Easy. And I just came out and I just wanted to see it again. And I've watched it many times since. And it's like, how wrong could you and obviously at this point, we bow down to Jerry Bruckheimer and say, you saw something we didn't, you know? And so, you know, credit to him. I thought it was a fantastic film. And I thought that it was the wrongest I've ever been about a movie.
There we go.
Yeah.
So, and Josh, what's your number one?
My number one is Wreck, man. Wreck came out at a time, I watched Wreck at a time where I had recently seen Cloverfield and basically considered the shaky cam cinema experience one of the worst things I had ever sat through. And then on the same token, I was over zombie films. So essentially someone had sold this film to me and gone, it's a shaky camera movie about zombies in an apartment block. And I was like, get fucked. Like, I was just like, I'm not even going to waste my time with that. And if it wasn't for response towards the film, I wouldn't have even bothered. But when I actually sat down and watched it, it's, like I said, one of the best horror films I've seen in like the last 10 years. Again, it's not perfect, but it's just such an interesting experience and something so different from anything else like it. And everything that they're doing with the series so far and the next two films they have lined up all look absolutely awesome, like just as concepts. And these are very original filmmakers making very original films. So
I have to admit that I've never seen Wreck or the American remakes.
No, nor have I.
Yeah, don't see the American remakes because it wrecks the experience of what is a very, very classic experience based on a low budget film situation. So it's like you could watch the American ones and quite enjoy them, but it's just you shouldn't.
So if I actually watch them and then turn around and tell you that I actually like the American ones better, you'll disown me?
Only if you've watched them in the American order and then the other order. Like, right. That's the only time I can't let people have that opinion is if you didn't watch the original first. If you watch the original first, it's a different situation. But you have to see what they did with it first. Right. Otherwise, I just don't think it's a fair analysis. It's like people that go, I watched the American and then watched the other one. I didn't like it. It's like, yeah, well, of course you didn't. You've had the plot wrecked for you. You've got the basic generic situation wrecked for you, and then you always associate that as the original because you watched it first.
That's fair. That's a fair comment. All right, so that's Wreck, R-E-C, by the way, for those who are listening and haven't heard of it before. It's and the American one is called Contain. What's it called? It's called
Quarantine.
Quarantine, that's right. The American version is called Quarantine. That's right. So, but yeah. I want to see. I've actually been meaning to try and get hold of these films for quite some time. So, all right, we're running a little bit long here, guys, so we're going to skip feedback this week. I will save these feedbacks, and we will use them next week, okay?
Can I give you some breaking news instead?
Sure, go for it.
Warner Brothers has chosen Ben Affleck to direct and adapt Stephen King's The Stand.
Ben Affleck, well, that could actually be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ben Affleck's not a bad director. I just don't think The Stand would make a good film. It's too big.
Yeah.
It makes a better miniseries. There's too much story there for one film.
Unless
they made a miniseries out of it back in the...
Also, a part of the Avengers was shot on an iPhone. There you go, just throwing that out there.
Wow, all right. It'll be interesting to see the Avengers, see if we can spot that part.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to wrap this puppy up because we've got to get out of here. If you want to disagree or agree with anything we had to say today, movie-wise, why can't my thing work here? Hold on a second. You can send feedback to feedback@filmactually.com. Oh, I have a giveaway. I forgot. Oh, I forgot. Let's do that.
We're giving away Josh.
Let's do that. Hey, yeah, Josh will be yours for a night. The new Guillermo del Toro produced film, Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, is coming out soon. And I have some complimentary passes to it. Now, the way you're going to win these... No, you can't have one. Oh. The way you're going to win this, I actually have, we're going to have some on the site in a site competition. So if you don't win here, look on the site in the next few days because we'll have them up there as well. But for the show, for people who listen to the show, just for the listeners, I'm going to give away two of these double passes right here on the show. And the way this is going to work is this. You're going to send me an email to feedback@filmactually.com with your... mailing details, like your full address, so that I can send these off to you. And the winners of these two tickets will be the second and the fifth email that I get. How's that for confusing? So the second and fifth email that I get will win these two passes. But here's the trick. No email received before Monday will be accepted. Because we got to give all the listeners a chance. So those who are watching live don't get an immediate go, hey, I'm in there first. So it has to be from Monday. From when the episode goes up on Monday, we're going to then look at our emails. And the second and the fifth emails to feedback@filmactually.com will win these tickets. Okay? So that's how you get it. So don't be afraid of the dark. Double passes for the in-season passes. So get your emails in. All right. Was that convoluted enough, or should I go through it one more time?
No, that made sense.
Okay, good.
Besides, it's a podcast. They can re-listen to it.
They can re-listen to it.
Draw your diagram later, David.
All right, back to what we were saying. Agree or disagree with anything we have to say? feedback@filmactually.com. Drop us a voicemail, 02-801-13167. Get your merchandise. Join the fan page. Now, merchandise are things like this fine mug that I've been drinking my coffee out of here, or T-shirts like this. Buy merchandise. Help support the show and wear your geek pride. Go to geekactually.com, and there's a follow us button. All the links to everything is there. So our merchandising pages, our Twitter accounts, our Facebook pages, all that sort of stuff, and direct contact as well for all of us. Now, if you want to, if you like this show and you want to hear our other show, just go to iTunes or search for it on geekactually.com. The show is just called Geek Actually, and it's all of our geeky nonsense. Josh, where can people find out more about you on the internet?
Well, RawDLC.com is a gaming website, and you should probably head over and check that out, because I've been, well, all of us have been very busy boys and checking up a whole bunch of stuff on there, so make sure you go check that out. And also just to plug out anybody that listens to the show regularly and just wants to keep up with everything we do, we now have a Twitter account. Twitter handle is just RawDLC. Feel free to add us. We need as many ads as we can possibly get.
Cool. Before Richard does his, we've had a question in the chat room, which was, are the passes to a certain movie? Yes. The passes are to the movie Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, which is a Guillermo del Toro produced horror film starring Katie Holmes, Guy Pearce, and Bailey Madison. So, yeah, it's their in-season passes to see Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. Should I say that one more time? Don't be afraid of the dark. Richard,
what should you be afraid of?
I don't think that's your call to make, man. They're allowed to be afraid of the dark if they want.
Yeah, I think that it's a legitimate fear.
Yeah.
Richard, where can people find more of you on the internet?
They can't really.
Okay, good. Moving right along.
Oh, well, if you insist, it's therealbits.com. It's a film website, so if you like films, and I guess you do because you've been listening to this film podcast, then you can find me at therealbits.com. That's R-E-E-L bits. You can also find me on Twitter as well, at David E. Bits.
Fantastic. All right. We're going to have to forego everybody's plugs this week, except Anna. We'll do it really quickly. Reboundradio.com. Good Day Sir is the podcast. Go check them out. They're a lot of fun. WeekendRonan.com. Real Junkies is their podcast. Go check them out. They're real fun too. Okay, good. Done. Sorry, we're just running a little bit late today. And I'm starting to get an echo in the Skype, so we want to wrap this up. Now, we're finishing the show this week with a track from the Contagion soundtrack by Cliff Martinez, which is very Social Network flavored. Did anybody notice that?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, it's very Trent Reznor in style, and I think Trent Reznor does it better. So, and there's actually also parts of it that felt a little bit Daft Punkish as well from Tron Legacy. It's a little bit of a derivative soundtrack. So, but we'll play a little bit of for the people to sign us off. And if you guys have nothing else to add, I'm going to close the show. You got anything to add?
No, I'm just kidding. Nothing.
Well, in that case, we're going to say, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we will see you all next week. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed the show. And just a reminder that if you enjoyed Film Actually, you might also enjoy our geek podcast called Geek Actually, which you can also find on iTunes or at geekactually.com. It's our weekly nonsense podcast where we talk about tech and geek and fun things and food and just about everything else that we can think of. We have a lot of fun doing it, and we hope you come along and join us. You can also watch that live at geekactually.com/live.